Speak, O Lord, your servants heareth. Amen. Please be seated. There's one word in our gospel lesson that jumped out at me the first time I read it this week. And that word is compassion. That is the operative word to try to understand what Jesus was doing and why. You have to look at this word, compassion. It's what motivates him to act. As he looks around, what does he see? He sees a society that is under the boot of the Roman Empire. He sees a society that is being robbed and cheated daily by the temple priests. He sees daily that people are being driven off their farms, their little small holdings, into the city because their land has been taken over by the wealthy, supported by Roman law. And Jesus looks at this situation, and he sees people trying to make sense of their lives and turning to all manner of devices to make sense of their lives, of the lostness that they're experiencing, the sense that some power that is so great controls them, controls their lives, and controls their future, and takes away their hopefulness. This is what Jesus' compassion, this is why Jesus is motivated by compassion. He sees all of this. We don't have to be in the first century to get a sense of being shepherdless, being a sheep, a group of sheep without a shepherd. Just in this last week, we had a congressman shot. And it's a miracle that only one was shot and that he's still alive. This past week, we had a young girl found guilty of involuntary manslaughter for trying to convince her boyfriend to kill himself. And he does. This past week, there was a horrible, horrible fire in England. We still don't know the number of dead, but it's certainly more than the 60 that they're saying. And the worst of that is the discovery that the building was made with materials that were known to be flammable. They were known to be unsafe. They were known that they should not be used in dwellings. And here was a building 24 stories tall that looked like a Roman candle. The flames just coming from the inside to the outside, and the whole outside just bursting into flame and right up to the heavens. And people throwing their children and their infants, their babies, out the window because they felt that was a better way to die than to burn to death. And we see in our own country the shamefaced use of truth and falsity to win political control of this or that office. We find that people are on opposite side of the aisle in the Congress, Republicans on one side, Democrats on the other. And all of us in this room can remember a time when Republicans and Democrats worked together. We all remember those days. Great days. So much was accomplished. We worked together. Now the chance of that happening is very remote. So when I look around over this last week, I feel like Jesus must have felt when he looked at his society. So many of us have this sense of loss or hopelessness that things are not going to get better. And so I'm going to pin my hopes on this dream or this ideology or this goal. I'm going to get as much money as I can. I'm going to become as important as I can. I'm going to become as popular as I can. I'm going to become as beautiful or as handsome as I can possibly be. I'm going to find some way that I can show the world that I am somebody that's important.
There's a story by Guy de Maupassant, French novelist, short story writer, called The Necklace. The Necklace is a tale. Do you know this? Do you know the story? She knows everything, doesn't she? The Necklace is a tale of a young woman named Matilda who wishes she were rich and wishes that she was recognized. She wished that she could be seen by other people as being a woman of status, of importance, that people would come up to her and they'd say, they would speak to her with pride, and they would want to be with her. And she yearned for this. She yearned to be somebody that was important. And she wasn't going to get that from her husband because her husband was just an ordinary French civil servant. He had nothing to offer. Though, one day he managed to wangle an invitation to a spectacular ball in town. He got two tickets, and so he and his wife were invited to this ball, and she was just ecstatic. She saw this as her opportunity, as I would have if I were there too. Say, this is an opportunity for me to show my stuff and to be recognized by other people and to get out of the low status that I'm in. And so they took their money and they went out and they bought the most beautiful dress they could find. But that wasn't enough. She needed a necklace. Lo and behold, a good friend by the name of Madame Forestier had a beautiful necklace. And she lent it to Matilda. Matilda now put the necklace on with this beautiful dress, and she was stunning. And she knew that she would have an effect, an impact at that ball. They would recognize she belongs here. She belongs with us, the upper crust. Well, it was a wonderful experience, but then the most terrible thing happened. She lost the necklace. She lost the necklace. This was her, it was a gift to be sure, a loan, but it was also the basis of her status in the society that she hoped to join, and she lost it. She's an honorable person. She and her husband are honorable. And so they take everything they have, and they go to a jeweler and they buy that same necklace. It costs 35,000 francs. It's an unbelievable sum of money. She takes the money, buys the necklace, and gives it back to Madame Forestier. And then they began working to pay off the loan because they had to borrow money. They had to borrow that 35,000. And so week after week, month after month, they slaved, and they were not getting ahead. And so they ended up having to let their servants go, the people who worked for them. They ended up both taking separate new jobs, extra jobs. They finally had to sell their house, and they had to move into a slum. At last, they paid off the necklace, all 35,000 francs. And shortly after, who should show up but Madame Forestier? And she was stunned by what she saw. Her friend, Matilda, looked like she'd aged 30 years, not 10. She was worn down. She was haggard. She was no longer the beautiful woman that she aspired to be. And Matilda told her the story, told her the truth about what had happened. She was so embarrassed, so ashamed. Madame Forestier is stunned. She's speechless. She hardly knows what to say. She says, those were not real diamonds. Those were not real. That necklace cost 500 francs. What a tragic story. This poor young woman who is so desperate to be accepted ends up destroying her life because she finds some sort of spiritual power in being accepted, in being beautiful, in being in the upper classes of society. That becomes her goal. Martin Luther said that whatever you set your heart on, whatever you pour your heart into, that is your God. Jesus had compassion on the crowds. He would have had compassion on Matilda as well. But the most important thing we can do in our compassion is to help people not have to need those false gods by offering something else. Think about it just for a minute. What do we at St. Paul's offer the people in this wider community? What do we offer that can lead them away from the false gods that always let us down? No matter what we do, no matter how much we invest in it, they always let us down. What do we have? What can we offer? May so many people feel unloved, undervalued, estranged from their own families, certainly estranged from God. Loneliness is a major problem in today's world. Many young people don't feel like they fit in, or they're just rejected, like this poor girl in southern Massachusetts. She wanted to be a part of a clique. They wouldn't let her in. And so she needed to be a part of that clique. You see, she needed it for her sense of identity, her sense of self. And how could she get that? She could get that by being the girlfriend of a dead kid. Now, whether that was her main motivation, I don't know. But that clearly has come out, that she was so desperate to be a part, to be accepted by this group of girls, that she helped her boyfriend die for the status it would bring her. There's a beautiful scene in the movie Dr. Zhivago, in the novel, based on the novel by Boris Pasternak. The general, his name is Zhivago, he's the brother of Dr. Zhivago. Dr. Zhivago has died, and his brother, who is now risen up, this takes place in the Soviet Union after World War I. His brother, Dr. Zhivago's brother, has risen up through the ranks and is now a general. And with his brother dead, he discovers that his brother had a child with Lara, if you remember the story. And so he spends all of his time trying to find this child. Where is she or he? Finally, he tracks her down. And he tries to tell her a little bit about, he doesn't want to spill the beans all at once. It's kind of scary. This is in the Soviet Union. It's kind of scary to have a general show up and start talking to you, asking you questions. Most people would be absolutely terrified. And he starts and he asks, how did you come to be here? He says, I was lost, she says. Now I'll read to you. He's asking her about one of the traumatic experiences in her childhood, a time when she became separated from her adoptive father, a lawyer named Komarovsky. The general asks her, how did you come to be lost? She replies, well, I was just lost. He asks again, no, how did you come to be here? How did you come to be lost? Tonya doesn't want to say. She says simply, I was just lost. My father and I were running through the city and it was on fire. The revolution had come and we were trying to escape and I was lost. The comrade general asked more emphatically, how did you come to be lost? She still didn't want to say. Finally, though, she did say, we were running through the city and my father let go of my hand and I was lost. And she added plaintively, he let go. This is what she didn't want to say. The comrade general said, this is what I've been trying to tell you, Tonya. Komarovsky was not your real father. Zhivago is your real father. And I can promise you, Tonya, that if he had been there, your real father, he would never have let go of your hand. That's the difference between a real father and a false father. A real father would never let go his daughter's hand. That's the difference between a real God and a fake God, a God that we manufacture out of our own needs. The fake gods can only take us so far and no farther. then they too let go of our hands. Only the God who is sufficient in every circumstance, the God who makes himself known in Jesus Christ, is the one who can meet our needs, is the one who can call us into relationship with him so that we don't need the false gods, the idols of our culture. It was compassion that led Jesus to carry out his ministry. May it be compassion among us too that leads us out into the world around us for the sake of Jesus Christ. Amen.